Hi, all. Welcome to the intro to my Stephen Falk re-release for Boys of Summer. Boy, this has just been a very, very busy summer. I am re-releasing Stephen Falk because Chris Royce, who runs the JV Club website and Twitter handle, very, very smartly said, well, why don't you release Stephen's? Because You're the Worst is coming back for its final season, its fifth season. And of course, that's what I'm in the midst of shooting now. And I said, that's such a great idea. I'm going to re-release his episode because it's his fault I don't have another episode. I have been given some extraordinarily fun, crazy, daring, bold stuff to do this season. I've been very, very busy shooting the show, and I just love it, and it's kept me, again, very, very busy. So while I have been bringing my gear to try to record people on set for episodes while I've been here, unfortunately, that has not been an option because we've been so busy shooting. So please give this a listen. Enjoy. Know that I am still hard at work lining up other Boys of Summer to come. And I hope everyone's doing wonderfully well. And I'll talk to you soon.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Been around the bend a few times. You have a storytelling show. You know what it feels like to have a microphone in your hand.
A little bit. Yeah.
Why am I acting like you don't understand how these things work?
Mics work.
You can do. I know you're a writer. I know that you're used to having both hands on a keyboard. But
yeah,
in this case,
now I have to talk.
Hold a microphone.
All right, let's do it.
This is it. It's happening right
cool.
now
nice.
In real time.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means. Obviously, it's not a live show, but it is happening in real time. Certainly, I'm saying the words right now that I'm saying.
Unless the minute you
right
edit,
now.
Then it's not in real time anymore.
That's true.
So you can't make a single mistake.
I can't make a single mistakes. I just made a mistake. Let's start from scratch. Oh my God. Thank you so much for coming over. I know that I kept giving you as many outs as possible, but I just feel so bad.
I know. I was like,
we saw each other yesterday like, God, that poor man.
Oh, he's
like,
going to be
he's
sick
just,
of you.
You're the worst every day, every ding dong day, including Saturdays and Sundays.
Yeah. But it's like that anyway. I mean, when being sort of the only executive producer on the show and I just have a lot of work to do and my writing staff doesn't work anymore. They cut him off at a certain point.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I'm the only person doing all that shit.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
I didn't know
so
that.
So there is writing. There's still like, there's always editing and cutting and joke punch up and stuff. And I send them emails and because they're not on the clock anymore. So I'm like, hey, can you please pitch jokes for this? And sometimes I'm here from them.
Favor.
And yeah. Exactly.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess that's the sort of the reality of working on a show that has not a huge budget, but allows the show to get made and get made for a second season and let you kind of do.
Well,
what
that's
you
the
do
thing. One, what's his name? Bill Lawrence, who ran Scrubs, told me he was like, "This is why the show is going into its eighth season or whatever it was at the time because I manage the money properly.
Yeah.
I keep budgets down.
Yeah,
and so you make yourself." Just you try not to stand out when they're looking at just numbers.
Right.
You don't want to be the one that's like, really? Why are we spending all that money to that? So,
right.
And we're probably never going to be a giant rating show. You know, we're not ever going to be Modern Family. So we need to keep things lean and mean.
It could be a lean, mean shooting machine.
Yeah, which makes it easy to say, no, I can't give you a raise to this, or no, I can't, let you have a dolly for 3 days,
right.
Camera department. Or not a dolly, they have dollies, but like a crane. Techno crane.
Just imagining.
We can afford a dolly.
We shoot on our iPhones, just to be clear.
And basically we put the ACs in shopping carts.
That's right.
That we somehow...
You guys remember film school?
Yeah, we somehow learned to bypass it so it doesn't stop when you leave the parking lot, which is so cool.
What a huge piece of technology.
That is amazing,
now,
right?
Now, I do still see shopping carts.
You don't see homeless people with shopping carts anymore, do you?
I just have seen two abandoned shopping carts very recently to the point where it stood out, especially because I saw two. I was like, wait, I just saw one the other day. So somebody's short-circuiting.
Wait,
those.
The question is, can you drive your truck into the parking lot of Ralph's, pick it up, throw it in, take it away, and then will it work?
I mean, it must.
I don't know.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
I like the idea that the power of it is so powerful it stops your truck.
It just stops your truck.
It stops your vehicle altogether.
It stops you.
How powerful is that?
Yeah, it's extremely. A good technology.
Well, the last thing I guess I'll say about it is that it's a great show. So people want to work on it. I mean, that's certainly true for me. Nice. Do you know what I mean? Opposed to like, oh, we're all doing this thing that nobody believes in. And there's not,
there's not money.
It's not a huge cash cow. Why am I even doing this kind of a thing? Like, I don't feel like there's nothing about the show that has that energy to it. And that's lovely.
Well, that's nice. But also, if you, Janet Varney, were always in it for the money, you would do a third of the things that you do. So
that's 100% true.
You have your heart in the right place. We're podcasting right now.
That's certainly true as well. Yeah. Well, yeah, and I don't know that I can say that the things that have made me the most money have been the things that I have believed.
What's
in the
made
most.
You the most money?
I don't even know.
Oh.
But like, you know what I'm saying? It's not like being a guest star on Bones.
Well, I was
is satisfying to me in a way that doing someone's web series that's hilarious and fun and filled with fun people I love.
I did Wolf of Wall Street, which wasn't a big payday, but at least it's certainly probably more than our show. And and she didn't. I think she did Modern Family, and that probably paid more than she makes or something. I don't know.
Maybe not.
But also those things, even the bigger budget things, don't pay the guest stars that much money. You're still not making that much money. Like,
no, that's true.
Chris Geer said that I think he made like $1,000 off Will Smith's After Earth, a big budget sci-fi movie.
That's so nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he must have filmed for weeks and weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess that's scale. That's crazy.
So. Yeah.
But let me ask you this. Did you have... I mean, this is not a show business. You'd think it was based on the last 5 minutes, but it's certainly not a show business podcast.
Right.
But did you feel like, I feel like there's a couple of different kinds of people in this town, and some of us develop into being the other one, and some of us develop out of being the one we came in as. But did you come into this business feeling like anything's possible? I could have my own show, I this and that. Or did you come in, and I will say like I did, which was basically like, I don't know. I'm just, somehow I ended up here and like, I guess I'm working, but it could all go away.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really have I wish I had more of a sense of entitlement because I think I would have been more sociopathically ambitious if I had sort of been like, I'm the best thing there is here. Is anyone not noticing? Like,
well, I think a couple of things. I think one can probably come to this town and be very ambitious, but until your craft is up to the level that where it needs to be, where it's going to start getting noticed or certainly making you money, you can be as ambitious as you want.
Yeah.
I know a lot, you know, this sounds pretentious, but until I took my email offline, my inbox was filled with very ambitious people, contacting me about every little student film they made or every little whatever.
Right.
But it doesn't mean that they're necessarily ready. So I don't think, even if I was incredibly driven and ambitious and like what makes Sammy run, I don't know if I'm savvy enough to have fooled people into giving me the career that I wanted to.
Right.
I think it had to take until I was 42 to kind of be ready. And for really my writing, certainly my ability to produce a show, I wouldn't have been able to allowed to do that. I just wouldn't have if I had not worked on Weeds for a lot of years and Orange Is the New Black, done the showrunner training program, I had my own failed NBC show. I don't think I would have been allowed to do any of those things, and I don't think I would have been ready creatively. Mm-hmm. And there are people who are, 26, 27 who get their own shows, and I don't know if a lot of them work just because they may not be ready.
Or they just have some person. They're just paired with someone who's so seasoned that they're sort of...
Yeah, like...
They're on the title, but they're not necessarily running that show.
Yeah, to bring it back to Bill Lawrence. I think he actually did, but when he got Spin City, he was like 26, 27. But Gary David Goldberg, who had done Family Ties, was overseeing the show.
Yeah.
I think Bill would probably say he barely ever was there, but, that at least there's someone who could sort of say, here's how you do it, kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you came down here, or you're from the Bay Area?
I'm from the Bay Area. I went to NYU and I got my BFA in acting, and then I came here.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when you got here, your primary focus was acting, or were you
temping.
Like, I'm going to do wonderful?
No, it was acting.
Understand.
Yeah. I just wanted to act, and I so I just did theater, and then somehow got the worst commercial agent in L.A. And I think he's been indicted for something years later.
That's always a good sign.
I'm pretty sure, and he certainly should be. But I went to because like he made me go to his headshot guy. Uh-huh. You know, those kind of things. And try to get
there's always something like that, which when it works is great. Like if it's a great manager and a great like I feel like I got lucky because I had a good manager who had a great relationship with someone who was great.
Right.
And I ended up. But then I've had also the flip side of that where you're like, I'm sorry, what favor am I doing? Who am I giving money to? Who doesn't deserve it because it's your friend?
Yeah, I had the worst. So I had the worst commercial agent in the worst part of the valley who sent me to the worst headshot photographer where I took the worst shots. And it wasn't quite as bad as the actual quad screen composite.
Yeah.
But they made me take like a business guy. So I somewhere.
So rough.
Maybe I will send it to you and see you post because you said don't send headshots. Yeah. But
if they're embarrassing headshots.
The business guy is one thing. But then homeless guy.
No.
Like crazy homeless guy.
No.
Yeah.
Like smudged face.
Like smudged face. Oh, like God. I was in, and when I went into this thing, there were like, 15 people who had also been sent there all at the same time.
What?
Yeah. So it wasn't like a real headshot. And So it was just like cattle call, stand up there. Okay. That's your one look. Okay. Now go wait again. Back of the line.
Oh my God.
It was a fucking nightmare. I had so many of those experiences in my early time here in LA. Like I remember going to I was looking for a theater company. I ended up at like in Sun Valley or Sunland or whatever that is, in some like sketchy warehouse, being asked to pay money to be there. And I just like, I said, sure, because I know I can't like turn anyone down. And then I left.
Yeah.
Like I took the script with me, got my car, got my 88 Honda Civic and left. Yeah. But no, I came here wanting to be an actor and I hated writing, never wanted to write at
all.
Isn't
that funny? Yeah. And so then how did you end up writing?
The theater company that I found myself on the board of directors of, we couldn't afford the Samuel French rights to put, because, you know, it cost like $75 at the time.
Yeah.
And we were pulling maybe like 6-8 audience members down at the complex on Santa Monica.
Yeah.
So we could not afford $75. So so some of the board members started writing. We were like, we'll put on an evening of one acts that we write.
Yeah.
And so we don't have to pay that royalty. So I started writing one acts and
I'm sure you've
it.
Told that story a million times, but that is
no,
amazing.
Not really.
It's pretty amazing that you were like, ugh, I guess I'm gonna have
it,
to.
Yeah. Well, I wrote a really good poem in third grade called "If I Were a Toe," and it was great. And I printed it on I cut out a toe and even drew a nail, and the poem was on that. So I was like,
it was
okay,
like multimedia.
Yeah, it was multimedia, and so I was like, maybe I'm good. And then I didn't really write. Then I wrote. I think I took like a short story class at NYU, maybe I think, or high school.
Did you have to take screenwriting or playwriting as part of their major?
No,
yeah.
No. Maybe I should have.
But maybe I didn't have to. Maybe that was a choice. Like maybe that was part of an elective within my major or something.
Right. No, I think I did take a class at I went to like an acting summer camp in Chicago, and I did have to write short plays there, and I remember being like, "Oh, this is kind of interesting. I'm kind of creative." But
was this when you were in high school?
Yeah,
yeah.
It's called National High School Institute, National Summer High School Institute. It was basically they send maybe like 125 all 17-year, all between junior senior year, and put them in a dorm at Northwestern for 6 weeks. Yeah, it's fucking insane. It's like the most amazing time.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, and then you do plays, like you were all segmented into one group.
I guess I've heard of this. Maybe I knew someone
it's
who did this
Cherubs
program.
Is the other name for them.
It sounds awfully fun. I'm sure there are other programs, but even being outside Chicago, I think I remember. Well, that means that you were pretty serious about the acting thing even when you were in high school.
Well, I read one of my sister's Tiger Beats when I was about 13, when I got into high school, I was like 13 or 14. And Kirk Cameron was driving that dope like BW convertible on the show. It was orange, I think. He lived above the garage and he got really good girls and wore a leather jacket. And I think I conflated his character to him. And I was like, oh, if he has this great life, I want that life.
Yeah.
So I'll try acting. So then that's when I started. I got one line in The Crucible in freshman year.
Mm-hmm.
The deputy governors arrived. Is what I said as Hopkins.
And did you say it like that? Or?
No, I was really good.
Okay, good.
And I'd done a kids' theater thing before that, but that was my first like, oh, I like it, because then you're every day you're hanging out with girls. It was all driven by girls.
I guess that's pretty, yeah. I feel
pretty
like
normal,
I know,
right?
I know a couple. Yeah, I would say guys, a lot of my creative guy friends cite girls either for music, like I got into music as a girl, okay, or I got into theater.
Right,
girls.
You hear that about music. Yeah. I played jazz trumpet, which did not pull a lot of girls.
I mean, I guess that probably didn't.
So I did that just for me. So I was in the jazz band, but then I did plays for the girls. Because there were not a lot of attractive girls in jazz.
How did it work out?
Which one? The girl thing?
The girls.
Oh, horribly. Really
so
bad.
So you were around them, but that didn't necessarily give you like the moves and the...
No. Well, because what I would do is fall for the older ones who were like fucking college kids. Mm. Like there were no way a super dorky freshman was going to get any of these girls. But I like girls more than guys. I'm very into, like, I'm a good friend. So I friend zone. Before that was a term. I just lived. I friend zone population one. Mm-hmm. I was there. I would. I do believe I once drove Andy Davis, the crush of my life. She was, I think, only a year older than me. I believe I drove her on my Honda Elite scooter to a boy's house once.
Yeah.
And deposited
very
her there
Hughesian,
to go,
very
go
John
have
Hughesian.
Sex. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I drove away. Crying probably.
Oh no! Well, two even yeah. years difference in high school is like 5 years difference.
And,
for
yeah, and
girls.
And what was weird though? I mean, I did. It's not to say I didn't get girls. I had a couple girlfriends. I had a good. I did okay, but not the ones I wanted. It was just like, oh, the kind of nerdy, the kind of butch biker girl who mountain biked everywhere and wore Patagonia jackets.
I like this girl.
She's great. And her parents were English, and I could sneak in and out of her house,
mm-hmm.
and so we were just booty calls for each other.
Yeah.
For
so she knew. Did you? So you felt like it was mutual that you guys were both kind of like.
Oh yeah,
oh,
she would call me
do.
Drunk. Because I have, and maybe I'll send you one of these. I have. So I had an answering machine. My parents got sick of me getting phone calls.
Is this in Berkeley?
Berkeley. Yeah. Oh, yeah this okay. Berkeley High. There's a dog sniffing. I had I got an answering machine. And they were regular cassette tapes, so I never rewound.
Mm-hmm,
I
mm-hmm.
kept them, flipped them over, and then wrote the dates on them, put them in a box.
You.
So I have maybe 40, and I have them all digitized. I have them all on CD now.
Yeah.
I haven't listened to them yet.
You, God.
So I have like four. I have 3+ years of every
Jesus.
Message, and since
how
I had my own
tapes, is that
is 30 or 40?
That's great.
30 or 40 90-minute tapes, I guess. Yeah. And so since mine was the only... I was like one of the only ones with a private number. Mine became the repository for drunken phone calls or weird confessions.
Oh,
or
shit.
Yeah. So it's someday I'm going to do something with it.
Yeah.
I just don't know what.
Yeah.
And recently I had them digitized because I started worrying about the audio tape. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Yeah.
God, I'm really envious of that. There's so much stuff like that I just don't have any record of, and thus have also probably no memory of,
yeah,
because
exactly.
it just disappears if I don't have a physical representation of something
right.
anymore.
Well, that's what I was worried about. And so I listen to these things every once in a while, and occasionally I'd be like, oh my God, I forgot about that person. Because I'm not a big Facebooker.
Yeah.
I'm also not super... Like, my life got more interesting once I left high school, mm-hmm. so I don't like long to know what happened to a lot of those people. I don't really care that much.
Yeah.
But
it's funny
because
as someone from Arizona who wanted to live in San Francisco from the time I visited there when I was 13, the whole Bay Area to me in my 13-year-old mind, probably up through graduating high school, would be like, well, I would care about that if I were in an amazing place like that. I'm sure if I were at Berkeley High, I would like have all these amazing friends.
Well,
the
fact of the matter is unlike many things in life, your weird vision from 1,200 miles away in the desert was true. Like everyone was, the people that I want to know what happened to, I know.
Right.
I'm just talking about like the riffraff, like the side friends.
Yeah.
But I'm still friends with all my friends from like when I was 3.
Yeah.
I have a running...
Did you guys all go to the same school?
Yeah,
pretty
yeah.
Pretty much all the way through?
Yeah, like one got sent to like reform school and then got his GED, but he came back into the fold. One moved away, but came... But like I have a running on... I'm sure it's going to start going off any minute. I have a running text chain on my phone with like 6 guys from when I was 3 and 4.
Oh, that's great.
Every day, all day, like...
That's so amazing.
It's
that
really
is
weird.
Really amazing.
And my mom lives in the same house that I grew up in. I have the same phone number.
Yeah.
She has the same phone number.
Did you have siblings?
I have an older sister, but she lives in Wisconsin.
Okay. How much older is she?
2 years.
Okay. And was it just your mom with you?
No. Dad too. Yeah.
Wow, that's so cool.
Yeah. But so everyone.
I have one friend that I've known about that long. And to me, we hang on to each other for dear life. Right. Not that we talk that. We don't talk that much. But just to have contained that friendship and had the memories that we have, and to be able to, like, he's literally the only person, because these guys know, but I did like 1, 2, 3 in one school, 3, 4, 5, 6 okay, in one school, right, 7, right, 8, right. And they were all magnet schools. So you're just like never in the same place. So the fact that I have this friend that I went to all of the schools with is like, he's the only link I have to, he'll always know who I'm talking about. Everyone else will be like, oh, I didn't.
Yeah.
I
don't know what you're talking about. We did that too though, but we did jump exact same thing. But we all went together.
Are they creatives, or is it a disparate group?
One is actually down here and he's an actor. But then one is a school teacher. One is a fundraiser for the university. One installs solar panels, and one lives in Seattle. He has been in Iraq for like 6 years, and now he's back in Seattle.
Oh, wow.
So they're all like disparate.
Yeah.
We just talk about sports and make fun of each other.
Oh, that's like what I was going to ask you next. Was like, what are the common ties? What sports are you into?
I'm the Giants. Okay. So we talk about the Giants a lot, and me to a lesser extent, the Warriors right now are doing well.
Okay.
And then football, but we just kind of anything. We just what we called it back then, cap on each other all day. Mm-hmm. So we just like make your mama jokes and like perfect. We were still six.
You're a child.
Yeah.
So we
just say the N-word a lot less than we used to. And like we say faggot less. We don't do that.
As long as it still gets tucked in there once in a while.
I'm sure
just
it
remind
does.
Everybody you're keeping it real.
Yeah, it's keep it real. Exactly.
Do you see each other that often, you guys?
Yeah.
That's great.
Because I go up to visit my mom like maybe 4 or 5 times a year.
Well, that is a bonus that you're close by and that it's an area. It's great to be.
I don't think about it because I have it like a lot of things in life that we do. But it really is a rooting thing to have a place that you came from that is still there, and people that you came from who are still there.
Absolutely.
I know a lot of people whose parents, you know, quickly moved out of the town they grew up in, and they have no reason to go back, and they never do. Right. Is that you, or are your parents still there?
I don't go back that often, that's for sure.
Are they still there?
Both my parents are still there. They were not together from when I was little. Little. Like, I don't have any memories of them together, but I don't... I don't feel compelled to go to Tucson, for sure.
Right.
Yeah, I don't have that thing. I mean, when I go, I'm like, oh, it's great. As long as I'm not going when it's hot.
There's an article about Tucson in the New York Times today.
Oh, there is?
Yeah, the travel section, I believe.
I got excited because Lorraine Newman was a crossword puzzle clue in the New York Times crossword.
Is she from there?
No, but I mean,
separately.
In the New York Times. Yeah, the New York, that's just
this is a New York Times moment.
We're just having a New York Times moment, you
Lorraine's
and me.
Awesome.
I got really excited and I had to text her and thought, I know I'm got to be like the 800th person.
Were you the first?
I don't know. I didn't hear back from her.
Okay.
Somebody gets to be a crossword clue.
Somebody goes Will Shorts.
Little too good for me.
Race you out of the phone book.
I get it. Did you play sports in high school?
Not like, what do you call them? Intramural or not varsity or anything
not
like that.
Not as part of
No, just
schooling.
Side. No, because I was like the, of these group of guys, I was like the theater nerd, jazz nerd. So I straddled worlds.
Yeah.
So
that makes
sense
to me.
I didn't play.
Yeah.
I was less good at most of those sports than all of my friends.
Okay.
I was just good enough to like. I was good enough to play, but I wouldn't probably... No, I wouldn't be picked last, but, you know.
Right.
I had some things.
And they're all close with each other. Like, is it... God, I just think that's so cool.
I mean, I when I come into town, I can be a catalyst to get them together. Because, you know, life is... I don't see my friends here in L.A. unless we're all doing something together.
Yeah.
Or unless I put them on my TV show.
Yeah.
Like Todd, you know.
Yeah. It's a good way to... I mean, that's something that I have figured out also. Is like, boy, if you want to see somebody... It's really good if you can connect it to something that feels like a work commitment in some way, because otherwise time just gets so nebulous.
It's
just
so
like,
hard.
It flows
and
exists so differently in my head.
It really does. And what I found, I don't know if you have this, but people less and less host events, like host, not even parties. I don't really go to parties anymore, like barbecues or
like
dinners
a game
or whatever.
Night or,
it doesn't really happen that much.
God, that bums me out because I do enjoy... I enjoy a structured event like that.
Well,
a great deal.
We really try to. We have probably at least, you know, four or five things every year. Like that's like great. Oscar night we host every year, or like we'll do like three barbecues or whatever, just to like give people an excuse to get together. Yeah. I just feel like it feels like a service, and then I get kind of well, it's both lazy, like here, come to my house, right, so I don't have to leave.
Oh my God, I'm very that.
Yeah, but also it is kind of a service. But then I get mad because a lot of people don't then reciprocate, which they don't have to. It's not a tit for tat thing. But yeah, but I was just thinking. So if any of my friends are listening, have more fucking little game night to barbecues.
You know what? You'll be glad you did.
Yeah.
Because the commitment to make it, sometimes I get sort of, there is that sense, I think, again, because when you get busy here, it's a very specific kind of exhausting busy, and it's usually a very social busy.
Right.
It's like if you're shooting something, you're around people 16, 18 hours a day already.
Yeah.
So it doesn't necessarily, especially if you're like me, which is, I guess I figured out that I was an introvert, which is to say that I do need to recharge my battery by myself.
Right,
whereas I have friends who do all of that, and then they still want to go out and have drinks till 2 a.m. with a person that they worked with until 6.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. That.
And I'm just not that way. I may have been at one point, but I do need to kind of like separate. And so I think when we have this sort of like crazy awesome social job that's exhausting in its own right, and we're producing stuff, right?
Right.
Then it's like, oh, I have to produce this other social event with my friends.
Right,
that somehow feels like work. But then when you do it, you're like, oh, no, this is great. Like, why did I do this more sort of thing?
Yeah, except when you're cleaning up at like 1 a.m. Certainly. Or setting up. That
I'm a big clean up as I go, or even if it means like I'm listening to a conversation as I'm doing dishes.
But don't you think you're sending a signal to go home?
I might be.
Yeah. That's what occurs to me. So I wait.
Probably right.
I'm a big drunk cleaner upper. I love that.
It's much more fun.
Oh,
when
so much fun.
Definitely a little disconnected from the job and chore of it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
What was your mom? Were your parents very social? Did you sort of have like? Do you have a lot of people around when you were growing up, or was it kind of more of a quiet world?
It felt very quiet in my memory.
What did your parents do?
My dad was a high school teacher at a really bad school in Oakland.
Oh.
Very, very bad school.
My dad's a high school teacher.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What?
Was, I should say he retired. English.
Okay. My dad was history and government, but then eventually English. And
teaching at a school in Oakland where, like, no one cared.
Yeah, and then no one spoke English. Then eventually a wave of, like, Vietnamese immigrants, and soon, like, no one was speaking English. And and my mom didn't work until I was, like, in third grade, and then she went and became an elementary school librarian.
Mm-hmm.
Until like 3-4 years ago, she retired finally.
I think that's one of those like careers that I know very little about. I don't mean to down talk. Like, I don't think there's much to it. I'm sure there is.
Yeah.
It's one of those things like, you know, people have those sort of weird fantasy alternate universe jobs where you're like, you say you want to own a flower store. It's always like whatever you see in romantic comedies, women's version is like, oh, you work in a magazine.
Right.
Oh, you have your own little bakery, and you sort
then
you put it together. Like, you know what? I don't know. I think what I'm romanticizing is probably a very small part of the job, and the rest of it is like just as stressful as anything else.
Yeah.
But I think a school librarian is probably one of those for me in there.
Well,
it's like recommending books to elementary school kids, like getting someone familiar with Roald Dahl for the first time. Like, there's something very magical.
And then
about
in the romantic comedy, the guy would end up having to come and see you, and then end up reading to the class.
That's right.
Embarrassing himself.
I would look up, all the kids would turn around and be like, oh,
And then you're like, and you're mad at him at that point because he did something in the middle, beginning of the third act.
Yes.
So then you have to, it's story time.
Yeah.
If you want to be here, you have to read.
Yeah.
And then he'll start reading it and you'll go, you have to do the voices.
Yeah.
And then he'll start to do the voices and the kids will, and then one kid will laugh and say, and raise his hand and say something that was way above, like, the wit and wisdom for a seven-year-old.
Yes, a very
they'll make
wise,
fun of him. They'll make fun of him. And finally, then one girl, the girl you had been trying to like sort of pull out of her shell the whole time, will then say something about your relationship. You know she likes you or whatever, and it'll be a magic moment. Yeah.
And then, it's where everything comes full circle.
That happened to my mom, like, every...
I'm sure it did.
Oh, my, she had so many affairs.
So many
with
suitors
like,
and so many,
No, it was more like... Oh, we're having earthquake retrofitting, or there was asbestos, so now for the next entire year, the library is going to be in the gym, and you will share it with blah, blah, blah. Or there's now no funding for this.
Sure. I'm sure that's a huge part of it.
Or there was a part where she was like, when, you know, like years later, I'd see, you know, she'd come to my school or whatever for a jazz concert or whatever and be like, yeah, Josh, come here. You owe me, you still haven't returned X from 10 years ago.
That does feel like still a movie for sure.
That is a movie.
That's like a, that's a different, maybe that's a TV show where you actually get to see the ins and outs of like public education reform or non-reform.
Sure.
And you get to see everything kind of cracking and peeling at the edges.
I think that wasn't that The Wire
that's
season
That's basically The Wire
four,
season four?
Three? I don't know. Yeah.
Were there only season three?
There
season
five
four
seasons.
Were there five?
Mm-hmm.
Then I think it was season four.
Season five is the one that they tell you not to watch, and so we didn't.
I'm definitely watching.
I think it's four. Yeah,
yeah.
Four is the kid.
It doesn't get. It certainly doesn't get any better than that season.
Because three gets. If two did the brilliant. Stevedores.
Mm-hmm.
Three got back to the wire. Wire.
Right. Right.
The,
right.
The cops.
And then
and four,
four
was,
like, was
education system.
Everything's falling to pieces.
Slash Carchetti running for government.
Right. Oh, it's so fucking good.
Yeah. So good.
It's so good. Did you have a sense of that, like, in terms of, again, this sort of comes from me being in Arizona and having a specific idea about what the Bay Area was, but did you feel engaged culturally and socially in a way that I'm sure I didn't? Because
I was very aware the entire time I was in it that this was a really, really fun place to grow up.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's so good.
It's to have that awareness. I wasn't really aware in a visceral sense. I was in sort of an amorphous sense. Of how sort of liberal and skewed my worldview was compared to most of the country in which I live,
right.
Let alone the world.
Right.
So it wasn't until I went on a JSA trip to Washington, D.C., Junior Statesman of America, where all we did was get really drunk and miss all the buses. And I yelled at the C-SPAN lady and embarrassed myself in front of 200 people.
Why did you yell at the C-SPAN lady?
Oh, God. Well, I was just such a little fucking cocksucker. And I was... a woman from C-SPAN had been invited to come and speak to us. And she kept just... It felt to me, mm-hmm. as a little Berkeley radical, that she was just... pimping her news channel rather than giving us information that we needed as future statesmen of America. And so I was like, can you stop trying to sell me on your network?
Oh, God.
You corporate fat cat. And
were that kid.
Yeah. And they talked me. They were like, they apologized on my behalf. And I think I got kicked out. But it wasn't that intel. And so anyway, me and one of these guys, we went just to cause trouble in D.C., and they dormed us with like two kids from like Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember then, and there were kids from all over the country, and we were talking about abortion. And I remember like, we were like the only two people who believed that it should be a woman's choice. And and I was like, oh,
hang on.
I get it.
Yeah. And these are supposed to be the sort of like future leaders of America, one assumes.
Well, and they were cool kids. They were just like normal kids. They may have had southern accents or talk funny, but
Talked funny. Were you that person in class in general? Like, were you sort of the wiseacre? Were you a good student?
I was a good student, yes.
I mean, if you were in clubs like that, you know, and stuff.
Well, no, that was just for the trip to D.C.
I see. Good thinking.
Because we could never afford to travel as a kid. And so there was some economic element of it that led me to want to do it. But no, I was a great kid. I was great student. In that I figured out, I could sort of see the matrix.
Mm-hmm.
And so I knew what I needed to do at a bare minimum to get. I could always fake my way through anything. I faked my way through 4 years of jazz, because never practicing, but just being kind of entertaining enough to be valuable. That's sort of my trajectory as a kid. I was kind of I didn't contribute that much, but I was entertaining enough to be like 51% yes, we're going to vote him to the
right. Right, right.
I always knew where 50% cutoff was, and I always was just over the line.
Yeah.
But I know I got straight A's, but I learned how to cheat very early. I walked around just with test answers on my shoes, literally.
Amazing.
All over my shoes. Teachers never looked down for some reason.
Were you going to a big enough school that stuff wouldn't be caught, because it was just like, we have to just...
Probably. You know. I mean, 3,000 students.
Yeah.
A friend, me and one of my friends, we got an AP English, I think senior year, and we took a, we made a vow to not read one single the book, single book assigned, and see if we could still get A's.
Oh, no.
And we did.
Oh no!
We just faked our way through the essay. And this, the internet wasn't really a thing yet. It was just a nerdy underground thing. So
yeah.
This was just Cliff Notes and reading the back of the book and being able to argue. I think that's why I can write a little bit, because I'm able to sort of argue any point.
Uh-huh.
I can sort of take any side. So I could just pick a thesis. Remember essays? God.
Yeah.
Pick a thesis and argue it properly,
yeah.
Whether it was really relevant to the book or not.
Uh-huh.
And just tie it in. But yeah, no, so I was a good student, but not a great kid. Like, I was in trouble a lot with the... I think I just learned very early on that you get a dopamine release when people laugh when you say something. So,
yeah.
And it's much like any evolution, any Darwinism, a trait that's useful, then that the animal learns to cultivate it.
Absolutely. But did you have a sense... I'm trying to think if I did, because there's a lot that I can relate to about what you were talking about. And I'm trying to remember if I had a sense that there was unrealized potential that I was just choosing not to pursue as a young person, because I wasn't an overachiever. And I think I had some of that too, that was like, I want everyone to think that I'm this.
Yeah.
And so I definitely don't want to like get C's, you know, and I'm comfortable always being sort of at the top of the class.
Yeah.
But I also am not fervently pursuing knowledge, and if it's a situation where like I could just as easily cheat on a math test as honestly do it and learn it and then get a bad grade or risk getting a poor grade, I would just be like, well, why wouldn't I just get the A?
I think I was the same way. I don't think I thought that I could be a, you know, physicist if I had just applied myself, and really, I mean, to show how bare minimum I did, when I decided that I was going to go to acting school, because I didn't get into either Yale or Brown, which were my two academics, but I got into all six BFA programs that I applied to for acting. That very day, I dropped out of both calculus and physics and switched and said to double piano and, and double lunch.
You could switch to double lunch.
Double lunch.
Amazing.
And I started third period.
Double lunch.
I started, my senior year was the best year of my life. I started third period. I took... Me and Rebecca Romain, who's now... Rebecca Romain. We just sat in a piano room together, and she sang,
God,
and I played
so
piano.
That's so funny.
For an hour and a half.
Did you have credits? Did you get more credits early that you were able to do that?
Yes.
So that's the thing,
so
right?
I think you
had this... You skated by with that.
Because
like
I was in jazz, so I think that counted as credit. And...
I would have been so much happier as a person if I could have started school at third period time instead of first period time.
I had double lunch. I think I took journalism also with Rebecca, and we wrote the only article we ever wrote was one on weird candy.
Uh-huh.
We just went to the store, bought all those weird candies like Big Cherry or Big Hunk or Abba Zaba, and tasted them. And then we'd hang out in a park and just like smoke pot and shit. And my girlfriend, her family got scared from the earthquake and moved back to Taos, New Mexico, and left her there.
Oh.
So they rented her a room in this old woman's house.
Oh, my.
So she had her own apartment, basically.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And my parents, I never had any rules, and I had my own like motor scooter. So I would just sleep at my girlfriend's house, go to class at like 10, play piano with a cute future supermodel.
Were people envious of you, or was everybody like doing their own thing? And
everyone was at that point, everyone is doing their own thing.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to New York in 6 months. Yeah. So fuck all you.
Had you been to New York before? Had you visited it?
I visited under the auspices of checking out NYU, but it was really just for a girl.
Okay.
That I met at camp.
Yeah.
Who lived in Rochester, New York.
And you had that experience in Chicago too.
Yeah, so I went to New York, stayed
sounds very fearless to me. I keep coming back to that because I think I was a bit of a fearful kid.
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely had, I did a ton of drugs and stuff, so it's not
I was afraid of that.
In that way.
Yeah.
Oh, you were?
I was.
But you smoked pot, I guess.
I smoked tons of pot since like junior high.
What was your style like? Like, what music were you into, and what did you look like?
I loved the Doors.
Mm-hmm.
I loved like Guns N' Roses, loved hip hop.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I still listen to on SiriusXM, there's the Backspin, Channel 46, and it's all like you know, that kind of shit. Black Sheep school, and yeah. Eric B. Rakim. So I listened to a lot of rap, and I listened to a lot of jazz, actually. I didn't really have a style. I wore Birkenstocks, but I wasn't like, I didn't have dreadlocks or anything.
Yeah,
just sort of a normal, I wear flannels and I, you know, a little grungy maybe. Yeah. Little drama nerdy. Again, it's just sort of straddling everything. I never committed to anything, basically.
I can relate to that.
Yeah, I just was like, I'm kind of this, kind of that.
Yeah.
Because it allows you to also then mock all those things. And sort of, so if you're, in, you're kind of outside everything, you don't have to really, and I think that was a big vibe. I remember very distinctly, and this is a terrible thing about my personality. It doesn't exist anymore to that extent, but I was so sort of removed from, I remember, I think sophomore year, I had a girl like sleep, I was house sitting and a girl came and it was our first, like, you know, we're going to be in bed and sleep all night and everything. And I remember like making out with her and sort of like doing a sides like over her shoulder, like, which is weird.
To no one.
To no one. I was so like this is going to be an interesting memory. Like, cause I didn't care about her.
Yeah.
No offense to you, Rebecca. But it was so, I think I felt like I was already kind of half out of there anyway, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. I think, it's just weird. I was always sort of like, I didn't like hang out in my house a lot. I always kind of wanted to be elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And I was just sort of removed from a lot of the things I did.
I mean, it really sounds like you really honed a sense of like irony and sort of that like being able to sort of be smugly ironic, like all that kind of stuff.
Well, I think I don't think my mom is the sweetest woman in the world, but I don't think my household was very sincere. Maybe, maybe that's it. I don't remember ever not sitting in front of the TV as a family watching sitcoms while eating dinner.
Mm-hmm.
We watched the 7 p.m. reruns on the local stations of, not reruns, it was syndication. Mm-hmm. I would learn later. I didn't know what it was. But like of Cheers and MASH and Barney Miller and Night Court. And Cosby Show. And so I think I just learned sort of, and they're Anglophiles, they're not English, but so there's a lot of like Benny Hill and stuff like that. So I think early on, there was sort of a sense of kind of a British stoicism and irony about things. We weren't a family of screamers. We weren't like, I hear about those big Italian like families and these big blowups. And though my sister, you know, I remember her fighting a lot with my dad particularly. There was not a lot of like, there wasn't a lot of chaos. It was just sort of a detachment and sort of a quiet like let's just all kind of be quiet.
Well, that's what, because what's forming for me, which I'm interested in, you can tell me if I'm totally off on this, is that, you know, there are the guys who are sort of relegated to the friend zone a lot in high school, and they also are like really sensitive, and they're sort of too, like, they become the friend and then they don't have, like, there's no cockiness to those guys. And that's not, doesn't sound like you at all. So it doesn't sound like it's the you. Like, I had guy friends that I found out later had crushes on me. Yeah. And I was like, dude, I mean, I don't know if it would have happened, but like, I didn't even know. I thought we were just buds.
Yeah.
Versus like the guy who, you know, was like, I have to chew Tums because it's painful for me to be with you and not be able to smooch you.
No.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, no, I didn't do that. I bet if you asked them, a lot of them would be like, oh, really?
Yeah.
And again, not that's that they the would be like, oh, I totally would have done that. Right. I think there was a sense of, oh, I thought you were just like you made fun of me all the time.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, I think I probably treated a lot of these girls even older than me, like the kid sister I never had.
Yeah.
I never thought of that.
I mean, that's a specific kind of confidence. And it's interesting to have a crush on someone and to have the game face.
Yes.
Game facery to be able to sort of push past that and still be around them versus the sort of, you know, sad sack friend or the sort of like brokenhearted, like I'm writing poetry in a corner because I can't get girls kind of friend.
Oh, I knew there was a guy I still know, but he was the forlorn sad sack, made it completely, but he was more ballsy, but made it apparent to them.
Yeah.
That's why I was just scared, but I had a really sophisticated sense of irony and I'm an incredibly high self-monitorer, which may probably is why I'm not like 100% good as an actor. I'm like 90% good. Like I'm good, but I was never like, I never quite lose myself because I was always aware of exactly what I was doing.
That makes sense.
But I think, yeah, so I was incredibly aware of not embarrassing myself.
Did anyone break through that? If not in high school, then in college or at any point? I mean, obviously you're happily married and have a beautiful
fiance,
I should say. Yeah. And a baby on the way. But did you have, because romance tends to be, I think, the place where people find themselves out of control.
Yes.
Did you have someone where you're like, oh fuck, yes, I can't rely on any of those things anymore?
It was my senior year girlfriend, the one who ended up living alone. But she was it was really, really romantic in my mind. But so I took drama. The high school program became just wasn't what I wanted to do. So I found this outside school, and a lot of us from Berkeley High took there, and we'd take summer programs and we'd put on our own show, and so we couldn't do the high school shows, and the high school was mad about that, but whatever. And I became really good friends with this teacher, Bruce Ducat, and we're still friends. And I would hang out at it was in this old church on the other side of Berkeley. And I remember one day leaving, and this girl pulls up in a red, she has red hair, she's in a red pickup truck with New Mexico license plate.
Oh, sure.
And is like, hey, do you know where I can find the drama studio? And I was like, oh yeah, it's actually in here. And she got out and she had like big old titties and she was wearing like, I think she was wearing double denim and cowboy boots. Very like, you know, Southwest-y trash. Yeah. Red hair, like big mane of lion's mane of red hair.
Yeah, she sounds like she's stepping. I mean, like, and it's a fantasy. And she was new. It's weird. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and she was new.
A fantasy that you don't even know you have.
You don't have.
Until you see it and it's so specific that you're like, that's just right. I've never seen that.
She was not fat, but she was a big girl and drove her own pickup truck with a stick. And I was like, who are, and I had heard that there was this girl moving to Mexico from my drama teacher and she was going to take the thing. And she was like, maybe you can show her around. And then I saw her and I was like, oh yes, this has to happen. Uh-huh. Like, because she's new, and I was so sick of all the girls, either the stuck up rich girls who would never have me or the girls I fell in love with who had left. And so they were no longer here. Mm-hmm. All the girls in my class were just like, you know, whatever. They were, you know, played volleyball and they were going to go to like, UC Davis.
Yeah.
And I needed something more interesting. And she came. And then, so I just fell head over heels, made an ass of myself for months. Friend zoned it, but also I worked it so hard, got her.
What does that mean?
I developed a lot of like really sneaky game, like mind shit, not negging. It was never like anti-feminist. It wasn't like, but it was just, I found ways to like, when an angler catches a fish, I knew exactly when to pull and then when to give, let her run for a while.
I mean, that's a tricky conversation, but it goes in line with like the sort of constant heterosexual arguments that people find themselves in that have a lot to do with like, well, if someone says they don't want any games, but then you sort of play it, whatever, playing it straight and ahead and honestly,
right,
ends up like on either side, either sex will end up being like,
sorry,
no, it's just I'm not that intro bored, or like there's, you know, it's
particularly
it's
women under 25. They're I think a lot of them are still working through those, whether they're daddy issues or otherwise, the asshole phase. Mm-hmm. And the inability to be attracted to anyone who likes them.
Mm-hmm.
And guys certainly have that too, but I've noticed it in women a lot. So it's really difficult, I think. And so, again, like that Darwinian thing I was talking about, I was going to, you know, I was out in the forest, I was going to starve if I didn't learn to develop other ways
of
hunting.
Right.
Yeah. So I had to learn to trap or camouflage. I had to develop I was not going to catch the dough with brute force or speed.
Right.
They were all faster than me.
Yeah.
So I had to develop tricky, tricky stealth. Little, yeah, super stealth. Yeah.
I get it, though. I get it. I mean, that's a really specific, like, I feel like I understand what you mean by it's not about making her feel bad, but it's definitely about not handing her your heart. Because, like, a girl doesn't know what to, she doesn't want that. Like, most girls at that time. I don't think I wanted it.
I knew that because I was so many, I was such good friends with so many women. Mm-hmm. And some of them were genuine. Not all of them I had crushes on.
Right, right.
And then I also was dating or whatever, sleeping with people that I wasn't actually that interested in. So I was sort of doing all the field work. But then when this girl came along and when I finally got her, I fucked it up miserably. It took a few months, but I eventually fucked it up. Sure enough, I did. And I got my little fool heart broken, and that carried over to then a lot of bad behavior in college because I was still like, well, then when you give your heart, when you actually open it up, you walk in at a cast party and see them making out with a rugby player in the kitchen and then they break up with you and when you have a problem with that and the horrible part, she and I were doing a play called Women in Wallace, in which I was the lead, and it was me and seven women. And
this is perfect. Feels very metaphorical.
And so it was. It traced this guy. I think the kid was like it was a high school age play. He won the Young Playwrights Festival at Louisville with this play. And anyway, so it was all the women of his life, from his kid sister or from the 6 year old or whatever, all the way up to this girl who then saved him. And she was playing that one, and I had to kiss her and fall in love with her every night on stage.
Oh, God.
And I remember leaving tech rehearsal and walking to Live Oak Park, and it was raining, and sitting on a park bench crying in the rain during our lunch break from tech, and then going back and rehearsing with her while she was like, she wasn't texting because there wasn't texting, but she was like dating this rugby player. Yeah, it was horrible.
Oh, God.
It was kind of miserable. Years later, she became a Scientologist and tried to fuck me into Scientology. when I moved to LA, and I think she still is.
God, so you were the last, maybe the last person I could ever imagine, especially after everything we just talked about. The last person I can imagine being like, you know what? I think this is for me. I think Scientology is the way for me.
These e-meters are incredible.
Yeah. God. No. Oh boy. All right. Listen, I'm going to get into this MASH game, and I'm very excited about it.
Okay.
Okay. First category will be. Three. I'm trying to base this off of things we've talked about as well as just my favorite categories. But three TV families, and that doesn't mean it doesn't have to be like a family. It could be a workplace comedy or whatever.
Oh.
But like three TV shows from, you know, at some point in your life. It can be from back then all the way up till now.
Okay.
That it would be rad to sort of just hang out with if it was all sort of real.
I think the Keatons from Family Ties.
Agreed.
Hots for the sister, really smart, cool older brother, and then like a younger sister who's trash and you could be. And then hippie parents, and they had like this dope craftsman.
Yeah.
Weren't they supposed to live in like Cleveland or Cincinnati?
It was someplace central. I don't know. For some reason, I think of them as being in a kind of a liberal place, but it's probably just because of who the parents were.
Yeah. The Cosbys. I just had such a crush on Felicia Rashad as a kid.
Adorable. I love that everyone else had a crush on Lisa Bonet and you had a crush on Felicia.
Isn't that weird?
Perfect.
That's so funny. I'm going to say... this is not a family, but I'm going to say the family of the Larry Sanders Show.
Absolutely. Great choice. Great choice. Love it, love it, love it. Okay. This is real life places, three that would be fun to have a vacation home.
Cinque Terre in Italy.
I had to think about whether I could spell that and remember how to. I think I did well
Cinque
enough.
Cinque Terre. I pronounced it wrong. Vacation house. Big Sur.
Great.
And I will say Paris.
Great. I would take any and all of those myself.
My friends my friend's parents bought an apartment in Paris, and they spend like half the year there. And and we went and visited. I was like, holy shit.
Do you think they're ever like, oh my God, we have a place in Paris and we spend half the year here? Yeah, or they just not think about it?
No, they probably do say that. Yeah,
it's absolutely nice to, speaking of having that self-awareness, it's nice when you have a situation like that to actually take a step out and go, I mean,
yeah, shit is awesome.
This is amazing. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
We should all do that more. Actually.
I think so too.
Yeah.
Okay. Three sports that you wake up tomorrow and are amazing at.
Oh,
like,
cool.
It would be fun to just be like, oh yeah, I totally kick ass at blah, blah, blah.
To be amazing at. I think it would be really great to be an awesome pole vaulter.
Ooh,
it just
no
seems
kidding.
So bizarre.
Yeah, that really
I don't
is.
Know how they do any of that shit.
It really is.
And then you could also like break into a lot of places.
Yes.
Just with a pole.
Yeah. That would be a very surprising thing.
Wouldn't it be
for
great?
Someone to find out about you too. Like, I'm sorry, you're what?
Right. It would be so
let
dope.
Me see something. Yeah.
And you could break into so many places and then leave no trace.
Yeah.
No lock was picked.
Yeah.
There's no fingerprints.
Yeah.
Because you take your pole with you.
Yeah, you really are onto something.
Yeah. Yeah. Tennis, I've always been, I still play tennis, and I've always been sadly mediocre at it.
Yeah.
I would love to just be able to smoke anyone. And because it's, cause I think, I like playing golf, but it's such a douchey sport.
Mm-hmm.
I'm ashamed of it. But I think tennis at least is like, but anyway, it's one of the sports that you can then like impress fathers-in-law,
sure.
You know, or business associates.
Yeah, yeah.
Were I in any of those kind of sports fields, and I think it would be really cool to be great at base jumping.
Oh, that's amazing!
Yeah.
Ugh.
Because I'm too much of a pussy to ever do it.
Yeah, I am too.
Yeah.
Okay, next one will be three musicians that, I mean, this could go back to your jazz trumpet days, but three musicians, or it can just be so fictitious that it's like, I don't even know what you would bring to the table musically. You could tell me, or you don't have to, but three musicians that would be amazing to like perform with, to have performed with, whether they're living or dead.
Okay, well, he just died. Ornette Coleman is a free jazz musician, and he just like some of his later music was a lot of just wailing into the thing and not an atonal, and I could have done that. Who else would it be fun to play with? Yeah, I'll just keep it jazz. I think Thelonious Monk would be fun to watch because he just like mumbled and he would like get up and just start walking in spinning in circles during other people's solos, and was just seemed very, very invested and weird and kooky, and was
love
on
it.
A lot of drugs. And I think it would have been fun. Louis Armstrong is very, I think his reputation has been sullied by his inclusion as a soundtrack for romantic comedies.
Right.
But he was such an important figure, so seminally amazing, and then also just had such a tortured career and so much racial stuff, and
have
take
they done
advantage
like
of,
a biopic? Of
not
a,
I don't think they have, but his life was really interesting, and also he was just a massive trumpet player.
Yeah.
I think that'd be fun to play.
Those are great. These are all great. Come on, love it. Okay, let's do three. What about three sort of alternate universe careers?
Yeah.
As I'm joking about being a librarian.
Okay. DJ, because,
ooh, nice.
But it would be, but very much a DJ like Christian Slater in Pump Up the Volume. Like a lot of like cute high school girls had to, and disaffected gay teens had to listen to me and really get a lot of inspiration from me. And then when I'd play music, they would all dance.
Have that feeling. Like I dated in my early 20s, my boyfriend for 5 years was a DJ, and I didn't even know I gave a shit about that until I went and started listening to him spin. And I was like, this is really sexy.
It is so cool.
This isn't ever something I thought about.
I in high school, a friend I made at this drama camp, I was driving up the Oregon coast to visit another friend who was in the circus. So she was up in Oregon. So I stopped in Klamath Falls, Oregon to hang out with this girl named Jess. I don't really remember her last name. And she was a DJ in high school at the little radio station. So I drove up this like remote hill up in the forests of Oregon, and it was her alone. She was running the like the AM station, just feeds, just plugging things in, but then doing her live show on the FM station.
Oh wow. Oh, okay. So you're that is being a radio DJ. And in my mind it was like spinning
party DJ. No.
Oh yeah.
Oh no. So it is. Not into that. I'm talking about radio DJ.
Got it.
And there's something about, and I always just loved radio. I love like driving late at night, listening to, like I would listen to like Larry King, wherever it was, the weird syndicated, and there's all something muffled about it. And there's something just very romantic about the radio.
I totally get
it. And I still listen to SiriusXM, which is very different and doesn't have the same sort of intimacy. Although one could argue since it's such smaller, they can be more niche and be a little more intimate.
That's true.
There was something, I don't know, I love that.
I get that. Okay. Yeah. Wow, that totally, yes, absolutely. Okay, so radio DJ, yeah. Two more.
Oh, sorry. Though it doesn't really exist, I think, in the way that it used to, but like photographer, like art photographer.
Great.
Now everyone has a camera and everyone's a photographer, but...
Yeah.
But, you know, I had my own darkroom for a while when I was in high school. I built a darkroom.
Great.
And I really enjoyed taking photographs and... every couple of years I do it a lot and then I put it away. But yeah. I like that. I think that's fun. I think I would like to be a theater director in New York.
Great. Great, 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 great. Okay. All right. Listen, all due respect to your beautiful fiance. This is a game of MASH.
Sure. It would not be without.
It would not be without alternate universe sexy times or alternate universe relationship-y type thing. Could just be like, I would have a one-night stand with this person. Okay. Or it would be like, no, this person, like, this is a person I would want to be with. With as little as you know about them. Or it could be like people from fiction. It could be like, you know, the character that so-and-so played in blah, blah, blah.
I'm going to forget so many of them. I'm really bad at this because I'm not like a giant crushy person.
Yeah.
From having been so much, I'm not like... People on set always talk about set crushes, and yes, it's a little awkward because I work with my fiance, but I haven't ever had a set crush.
Well,
not even like on old shows. It's weird. Carrie Coon from The Leftovers and Gone Girl. For someone who's like, I have no idea. I said that very
you
quickly.
You pulled that out so fast.
But she knows, and I met her and her husband.
Where did she play in both of those things?
She was Ben Affleck's sister, owned the bar.
Okay.
In Gone Girl. Like, on The Leftovers, she's the woman who occasionally has hookers come shoot her because she lost her entire family.
Oh, yeah, she's great. Yeah, she's great. Yeah, absolutely.
I think she's just starting to hump the main guy, Justin Theroux.
Yeah, great.
Love her.
Yeah.
And
it can be, you know, it can be like Molly Ringwald from blah, 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 because I really want to know. You know what I mean?
Yeah. In that case, I think Cary Grant from The Goonies and Lucas.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think she fulfilled that fantasy for a lot of people.
There's a scene in Lucas where she pivots on sitting on Charlie Sheen's pickup truck and you saw her panties for a second. I think I broke our VCR.
Yeah.
I think pausing that. Okay, so those two. And... I'm going to say Criminal Era Fiona. No, I'm going to say all Fiona Apple.
Great.
I think she's kind of amazing.
Great, great, great. Great choices. Okay, next one is three. Now, listen, it can be three foods or drinks that you know are really bad for you, but that you can have in perpetuity at the snap of a finger, as specific as you want or as general, like just pizza or this one slice of pizza that I can get a bottle, I can have it conjured up, and it's not bad for you. There's no physical negative health ramifications.
Gosh. Okay, then I would probably say Zachary's Pizza.
Great.
From the Bay Area. It's deep dish. It's amazing.
That's an East Bay thing, too.
It is an East Bay thing, yeah. I very, very, very much enjoy all forms of peanut butter ice cream.
Oh, God, that's great.
From your Chubby Hubby, which has peanut butter
ribbons. This is the best ice cream I've ever had.
To the Häagen-Dazs special limited edition that I have yet to open, that's in my freezer, peanut butter pie ice cream.
Oh, okay.
Which we found. I'm now allowed to have ice cream in my house because I have a pregnant fiance. So
fair.
But I don't allow myself to keep it.
Yeah. I'll just mix peanut butter into any ice cream.
Oh, you will?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I just had some chocolate. It's kind of like a frozen dessert more than is like low calorie, blah, blah, blah. But like I totally negated the value of that by adding like four tablespoons of peanut butter. It was just like stirring it in going like, this is great.
I ate 2 spoons directly from a jar of peanut butter right before I came here.
And then I fed it to my brother from another mother.
Dog lick it. And I, you know, for some reason, this always pops in my head when I, shit. Okay. I'm just going to say then carbonara from almost anywhere in Italy.
Okay, great. Oh, yeah, that sounds great too.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, my final category for you. I'm going to say, you know what? I got to go with 3 movies that are real worlds.
Oh, Lord.
That you can just drop yourself into and just exist in that place. So it could be fantasy or just be, again, with the TV show people that you know. It could just be like, I just want to know all of the people and blah, 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 and hang out with them.
All right. Well, Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be Ferris's. I want to be Ferris.
Great.
But I'm more a Cameron than a Ferris. It's weird. But maybe that's why I'm attracted to Ferris.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, he had Mia Sarah. He had like this 30-year-old girlfriend. clearly she was not in high school.
Yeah.
He can manipulate Cameron to do anything, but under the auspices of showing him a good time and helping him stand up to his father.
Yeah, that's right. Everybody wins.
Everybody wins. There's a movie that I love. I don't want to be in the world of Joe vs. Volcano, but I'm going to name check it.
Good name check.
I love that movie
so much.
Yeah,
yeah.
There's a movie called that no one likes called Mo Betta Blues.
Oh,
that is
no one
very,
likes Mo
very
Blues?
Cool. Denzel and Wesley Snipes as trumpet and sax rivals.
Yeah.
You get the Spike Lee floaty cam.
Yep.
You have really sexy naked girls.
There you go.
A lot of cool lighting. Anyway.
I think you made your argument. I don't know why people don't like this movie.
I don't know. Okay. And then there is a... I never think of this movie, but I just thought of it. And I think it would be awesome. There is a outdoorsy thriller with Tom Berenger and Cindy Poitier called Shoot to Kill.
Oh, my.
And they're in the woods, and I really love the woods. I love the idea of the woods more than I like the actual woods.
Yep.
And it's very outdoorsy and thrillery, and I love thrillers, and there's
snow. Did you
snow.
See that David Mamet outdoor the edge. One, right? Yeah.
That would
that's
be,
a great movie.
If there weren't bears, because I'm very afraid of bears, I would have picked that. And I'm very afraid of Alec Baldwin, and he's in that as well.
Yes, I know. Which one's the bigger
and
threat?
And now I'm afraid of Mamet's politics. So
yeah, that's really become a thriller / horror film on many, many levels.
Sure has.
Shoot to Kill, fantastic. Okay. Fantastic pull.
I bet no one has picked that.
That is, you're certainly not in my world. Yeah. Certainly not. Okay, tell me when to stop.
Stop.
Okay. I'm going to count these rings. I'm going to do some eliminating. I'm going to come back with your 100% guaranteed MASH future. I'll pause it. To the listener, it will seem as if no time has passed.
Okay.
I'm very pleased with the results. I asked you to pick up your microphones, dear sir. As we conclude our time on the podcast together, I have a wonderful future for you.
Okay.
Listen, the reality is, as you know, mansion, apartment, shack, and house, it could go any way.
Sure.
You ended up with a shack, but your shack is in Big Sur. So it's like a surf shack.
Oh, no, it's like a cool beachy.
Yeah, you got a little. What are you going to have? Some gross mansion, some McMansion in Big Sur?
No, I'm fitting
gonna have,
like, in a with chic the
little...
environment.
Absolutely. So no worries on that. I'm very excited that you ended up with this place in Big Sur. I'm also very excited that at your old place in Big Sur, when you're looking out at the waves, you can have delicious Zachary's pizza. Drop of a hat. Just think of it. It appears right in front of
Look
you.
Look at that.
Right in front of you.
Magic pizza, man.
If you need to get somewhere sneakily in Big Sur or elsewhere, I want to reassure you that you are a pole vaultist.
Yes, I am. Yes,
honey,
I am.
The dog's ball went up on the roof. Could you?
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. I can pole vault across the wave break.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. It's like a surfboard that's also a pole somehow.
There you go.
Perfect. You, I'm also very excited about the time that you're able to spend whenever you want with the Cosbys.
Oh, yeah.
Killer. And I'll tell you what's going to impress Felicia Rashad the fact that you have played with Ornette Coleman.
Oh, she's going to love it.
Come on. Well,
and Cosby's dad, if I believe right, was a trombonist.
That sounds right.
So I think he's going to be really impressed.
There you go. Yeah. Oh, you're going to fit right in.
Yeah.
You know where else you're going to fit right in? Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, you are.
Fuck yeah.
You got
man.
It.
Okay.
That's really good. This is all great. I almost think you're not going to give a shit that you, in your alternate universe life, are a theater director.
Oh, my God.
But it's pretty cool.
This is a cool life. Yeah.
No. This is a very, very cool life.
I direct a lot of theater, New York theater, from Big Sur.
That's right.
Somehow.
Phone it in.
Phone it in.
Pole vault over there. one giant pole vault away.
Okay.
And then this is interesting to me because if I had to go through and pick the person of the three that you listed, the person who is the most like the person that you're actually with is Cary Green. Because I'm thinking about it, I'm like, you know what? Christine is a little bit of a Cary Green.
She is a little Cary Green.
And that is who you ended up with in this marvelous
very
life
good.
Of yours.
I love that.
What a glorious MASH outcome. I think you did very well for yourself. And thank you so much
thank
for doing
you,
the
Janet.
Podcast. You're the Worst season 2 starts airing in the fall on FXX. You can keep in touch with Steven on Twitter.
Yeah. Just my name.
At Steven Falk. And then there's also a You're the Worst Twitter feed that you can follow, right? And then there's the hashtag for it too. Guys, we'll talk to you next time on the podcast. There is one final piece of business. You might patently refuse to do this, but I got to make it happen one way or the other. The Boys of Summer series always concludes with my guest and or me singing a snippet from Don Henley's Boys of Summer. If you can conjure any of it at all.
I bought my first real six string.
Nope. That's Summer of 69.
Oh, God damn it. Then I can't. You have to do it.
It's the I can see you. Your brown skin shining in the sun.
Got my hair pulled on, sunglasses on, baby. I can tell you my love for you will still be strong after the boys of summer have gone.
Ding, ding.
And then later he says Wayfarers.
That's right. He switches
it up. Yeah.
Which makes it impossible to ever remember.
Impossible to ever sing it properly.
You did a great job.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye, guys. As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.